I'm not coming obviously from a legal place. I'm coming from an activist place and an organiser. And I think knowing that the majority of people on this call are in XR, there's a lot of things that would be particularly relevant for us to learn, mistakes to avoid and that sort of thing. So to quote the film Network, the international currency determines the totality of life on this planet. There is no democracy. There is only Dow, Union Carbide and Exxon. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies. The world is a college of corporations inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business. So what did we do? We occupied with permission from and in collaboration with Gadigal people on Gadigal land. And to borrow from Dinos Christianopoulos and the Zapatistas, and this is a cat cry that went across Occupy, across the movement, was they tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. So Occupy did some experimental and instrumental things and missed the mark on others. And because of this, I'd love to think that movements today can avoid our mistakes and embrace what worked. And like any people's movement, Occupy was a product of a broader context that we won't have time to really go at today. But for anyone unfamiliar, we were part of a gorgeous global surge of protests that not only sought to transcend business as usual, but was very deliberately a refusal to recognise the legitimacy of a system that fused finance and government. So 2010, 2011, for anyone that was yet to tap in, it felt like the world was linking arms. Frustrated and broken from the global financial crisis, from Tunisia in the Arab Spring to the Indignados occupying squares in Spain, which was a response to almost 43% youth unemployment and protecting the idea of free space and creative commons on the internet, to the initial Occupy Wall Street protests in Zuccotti Park, which ignited the Occupy movement. And like Anthony said, we had occupations in 151 cities, 82 countries, protesting under different forms of government, which is important to consider. So Zuccotti Park protests kicked off on the 17th of September, and within 4 weeks we'd organised Occupy Sydney in Martin Place, slap bang in front of the Reserve Bank. So Sydney was the longest continual occupation of the global movement, lasting for 3 years under the name Occupy Sydney. We were evicted 1 week after our first night but returned immediately, and there was another eviction attempt in February, and in July 2013, which what was left of the occupation anyway, was shut down 5 times only to pop up again within a few hours. So what united us? Across borders, it was our mutual outrage at the virulent exploitative shitstorm that is unfettered global capitalism. We were protesting social and economic inequality, corporate greed, and the stronghold of corporations over government, namely the banks, some that had been bailed out, like Goldman Sachs, whose former managing director in Australia ended up becoming the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull. We're also protesting a lack of legal consequences of those who orchestrated the global financial crisis, looking in awe at a place like Iceland, who actually jailed their bankers. And if you haven't come across that, duck, duck, go it. It'll make you giddy. It's delightful. And, of course, we protested the increasing disparity between the hyper-rich that we deem the 1% and the rest of us, the 99%. So when we spoke about the 1%, we weren't referring to your bourgeois aunt who lives in a suburban mansion, but those elite hoarders and exploiters who today would look like a Jeff Bezos, Rupert Murdoch or Gina Reinhart. For Extinction Rebels that are here, that big fat 99% and 1% graphic on the inside cover of This Is Not a Drill, that's direct from Occupy. The Bernie Sanders campaign got it from us. The vast decentralised nature of the movement meant that every occupation moulded to the specificities of its own political and cultural context. We simply didn't swallow verbatim what came out of Zuccotti Park. While the middle class in America was being obliterated by predatory lending with mass foreclosure of family homes and the assholes on Wall Street were drinking Dom Perignon in the face of our comrades, literally, Australia was comparatively untouched by the GFC. We were high on temporary extractivist profit, busy she'll be writing in iron ore glory and Labor government delusion. So in some ways, Occupy as an idea seemed, on the surface at least, premature for much of Australia. And it wasn't. If anything, it was a sounding the alarm of what was to escalate and worsen. So here we are 10 years later being sent down the gangway of climate chaos and ecological collapse by a government captured entirely by fossil fuel corporations. So the blueprint of corporate greed and the stronghold over corporations over democracy remains. So Our occupations were localized, taking what resonated from occupations elsewhere and making them our own. So I can only speak for Sydney, but we became a big, beautiful mutual aid network where anyone who felt like a feed at any time of day could get one. Occupy Sydney developed into the Sydney 24/7 Homeless Safe Space and Kitchen, which was the only 24/7 place the food stress could access guaranteed free food in New South Wales. The name was changed from Occupy to get the state off our back, and it kind of worked. So, or even though our political purpose remains, so the lesson there is, I think, to be prepared to move and adjust with the political weather. You don't need to be stagnant and locked into certain things. As far as what it looked like, a big bloody mess is what it looked like. It was organised chaos, I promise. We organised and functioned laterally, so in conversation circles. There was no hierarchy, although as some of you from XR would understand, people stepped into skilled roles or areas of interest that benefited the collective. We listened, learned, shared and discussed not just movement politics and bureaucratic process, but ideas for a better and fairer world. Many people coming across instrumental thinkers for the first time, from First Nations sovereign elders to Murray Bookchin. And we functioned autonomously and were rooted in decentralisation, mutualism, working groups, the General Assembly, where we tried to utilise consensus decision-making and defiance. We grew a garden, installed a library, organised job support services, a street wardrobe, laundry services, blanket patrol for rough sleepers, which exists to this day, MVDA street medic and legal training, yoga classes, yarning circles, children's activities, art, music, sport, poetry, and ample beautiful trouble. So, you know, I read in the blurb for this event and have come across similar interpretations from various academics and commentators who went there, that we sought to transform the centre of major cities into common spaces. And that's true, but it's only part of the picture. We weren't trying to set up common spaces for the sake of shutting down cities, for example. That was not our goal. We sought to function outside the status quo. So that's outside the existing political order by creating common spaces. It wasn't about shutting down, but reclaiming public spaces for public purpose. Another defining characteristic, and in my opinion, a success of Occupy, was authentic, meaningful solidarity. And that was, you know, something that was touched on. We could have done a lot better, but it was very much a lesson that XR can apply. So the late David Graeber said that revolutionary constituencies always involve a tacit alliance between the least alienated and the most oppressed. So solidarity was essential to the spread of the movement, which was truly internationalist, because inequality is something that binds all of us at all intersections, albeit to varying degrees, and a direct result of the corporate greed and capitalist system that we were protesting. So this has been misinterpreted by critics as a watering down of our message, but really we were showing that corporate greed smashes all of us. So a couple of examples from Sydney. When I organised our initial march to Martin Place, there was a refugee rally slotted at the same time. I touched base with the organisers. We adjusted our start time to when they finished, and we joined their rally and they joined Occupy. Our march was co-led by the MUA and other unions who were very much a part of Occupy, and First Nations activists, some who had been occupying their own land in the form of tent embassies for years. Occupiers organised in solidarity with other occupations. So for the Melbourne people, you might remember when Sarah was stripped naked of her tent, which she was wearing as clothes. Sydney decided to dress in tents as an expression, as in literal tents, as an expression of solidarity, and even rocked up to the Downing Centre courts in our tents. Needless to say, we were not admitted, but we confused the hell out of the police. And lastly, a couple of examples. We responded to calls for solidarity from occupiers in Greece who were protesting austerity, and squatters of empty buildings to draw attention to Sydney's housing affordability crisis. So with all this talk about solidarity, it was as much as a challenge, even a concern, as it was a success, which is a complicated binary, but it's worth exploring. So Occupy attracted everyone. And by everyone, I mean those who I've mentioned, to the hacktivists that beautifully disrupted Visa and MasterCard for refusing to process donations to WikiLeaks, to Anonymous with a capital A, which was a collective of hacktivists appearing online in Guy Fawkes masks, and it was a critical vehicle for the spread of the movement, to varying revolutionary ideologies, which sometimes manifested in the stacking of General Assemblies, to the 4chan libertarians, many of whom have since become full-fledged Nazis. So for a similar reference today, I guess you could consider QAnon. Now, I'm not going to give them any of my oxygen except as a lesson for movements today, and namely XR. To grow a movement in a truly regenerative way, in a way that welcomes every part of everyone, we can't be open to fascists, because that ideology automatically renders us unregenerative and not inclusive. Similarly, if we are solely focused on demanding governments declare a climate emergency within the current and very real political context, we risk inviting a fascist response. So historically, when governments declare states of emergency, they've been known to send in the military, which is always accompanied by repression and violence. How can we avoid this? We send out our third demand for a citizens' assembly, and more simply, commit to being a fascist-free zone. So the 1% rely on fascist thinking, often replicating it in corporate structures. We don't need it in organising spaces that are fighting for a livable world. And this includes eco-fascists that are worryingly very active within mostly white environmentalist spaces. So I've covered some, but I'll briefly mention a couple of other successes and challenges that, like I said, can be defined as both. So one of the things that traditional activists love to focus on and criticise is that the movement had no critical path, no clear theory of change, and no demands. Lol. Okay, so but the refusal to make demands, to quote Graeber, he said that quite self-consciously, a refusal to recognise the legitimacy of the existing political order of which such demands would have to be made, direct action is ultimately the defiant insistence on acting as if one is already free. So while ideologically that ignites my heart, I also see the importance of Frederick Douglass's sentiment when he said that power concedes nothing without a demand. As for Occupy Sydney, though, while we didn't have an explicit demand, we were pressing for banking reform and an inquiry into the banking sector. A few years later, ironically, under the Turnbull government, we got a royal commission into the banks. So rather than come up with a vision for a new political order, Occupy's initiators sought to help create a way for everyone to do so. So another thing, we shifted the conversation, the concept of the 99% and the 1%, which is now part of activists and political vernacular. Occupy Sydney specifically birthed 34 different groups still organising today, and even XR was co-founded by some of the Occupy London organisers. Now, I feel like I need to repeat this because I think it's such an emphatic part of what we need to consider is it was truly internationalist. So something XR should embrace if we're serious about our purpose. As Carl Sagan said, carbon molecules don't have passports. And lastly, something that I learned from Occupy that I believe was a success was how our movement rested on a strategic preference for prefigurative politics. So that's the idea that the organisational form that a movement takes should embody the kind of society that we wish to create. Graeber identified that in 1 year, we managed to identify a core problem of the toxic system, and that's the fusion of corporate interests, finance and government. In this country, it's a case of state capture. Occupy's proposed solution was the creation of a genuinely democratic culture. So my fear that if movements today aren't centred on this, we will never achieve the systems change necessary for a truly livable and just world. So lastly, never forget, they can't evict or arrest an idea. So keep those conversations happening.